This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
One of the most important UFO-related government documents to emerge since the early 1980s is entitled, quote, Restricted Psalm 101 Majestic 12 Group Special Operations Manual, Extraterrestrial Entities and Technology, Recovery and Disposal, stamped Top Secret, Magic Eyes Only, close quote, and dated April 1954, only 7 years after a UFO crash made headlines in July 1947 near Roswell, New Mexico. The cover page is also stamped with the official United States War Office seal that was still used in 1954. At my science, environment, and real X-Files news website, earthfiles.com, I am reprinting the entire Psalm 101 training manual for Earth Files podcast listeners to view. Go to www.earthfiles.com's headline page and look for the Earth Files report dated May 28, 2009, about the Psalm 101 Extraterrestrial Training Manual. Chapter 2 begins, quote, Extraterrestrial technology is defined as follows. Aircraft identified as not manufactured in the United States or any terrestrial foreign powers, and not experimental military or civilian aircraft. Aircraft in this category are generally known as unidentified flying objects, or UFOBS. Such aircraft may appear as one of several shapes and configurations and exhibit extraordinary flight characteristics. Extraterrestrial biological entities, also known as EBAs, are described as creatures, humanoid or otherwise, whose evolutionary processes responsible for their development are demonstrably different from those postulated or observed in Homo sapien. Close quote. Page 5 describes four categories of unidentified flying objects: elliptical or disc shape, fuselage or cigar shape, ovoid or circular shape, airfoil or triangular shape. About the triangular shape, the training manual states, quote, This craft is believed to be new technology due to the rarity and recency of the observations. Radar indicates an isosceles triangle profile, the longest side being nearly 300 feet in length. Little is known about the performance of these craft due to the rarity of good sightings, but they are believed capable of high speeds and abrupt maneuvers similar to or exceeding the performance attributed to elliptical disc or circular-shaped craft. Close quote. 1954 was 55 years ago. In the past half century, many people around the world have reported seeing large triangle-shaped aircraft that are silent. At each triangle corner, eyewitnesses report a circular white light, and at the center of the triangle is a larger circle of red light. One of the most dramatic close-up encounters happened in the Idaho backcountry of Challis, where four hunters had camped on September 27, 2000. Chris and Mark Bales are brothers who work together in their Bend, Oregon construction company that builds homes and commercial offices. The brothers have been going to the same Challis hunting area for nearly 20 years. With them on that September 2000 trip was their good friend Rob and Rob's father. The group had been out all day in the woods and had returned to fix dinner in their camp trailer. Around 9:15 p.m., Chris Bales left the trailer to go to his pickup truck to get food.
I reached over, opened the lid of the box. I had a sack of groceries in there. I was going to take them inside. And just as I was reaching down in there, I got just a really strange feeling. It was like if you were in a dark cave and people were holding like a really heavy wool blanket just over the top of you, and it wasn't touching you, but you kind of knew something was there. And for whatever reason, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I looked up, and as I was looking up, I kind of stepped back off the tire, and I had a small flashlight in my right hand, and there was an object that was blocking out the sky completely. It was a perfect, clear, windless, beautiful evening. And this thing was blocking out the whole sky from one side of the draw to the other. It was a big triangular shape, each side being about a football field is what popped into my head, like goalpost to goalpost. So it was huge.
And that would be maybe 300 feet on a side.
Correct, yes. Pretty intimidating for me at that point. The sides and texture I could see with the flashlight. And the outer edge was like a flat, black, kind of charcoal-looking, smudgy dark that kind of blended in around the bottom edge of it, blended into a greenish gold, but pretty muted. Texture was like suede leather, black charcoal sides, came around down about to the bottom of the craft or whatever it was.
And that bottom was what color?
And the bottom of it was kind of a goldish green, really flat, nothing shiny. And there was no lights on. That thing sitting just above my head, somewhere between 100 and 200 feet above me. I know the trees were approximately 100 feet tall, so it was probably no lower than that. It was just sitting there, not making a sound. Something that huge basically levitated in the air, not doing anything. Non-comprehension of just about everything that I saw is probably one of the best ways to explain it. When my flashlight went across the bottom of it, it was like, whoops, we've been spotted. And these lights on each corner, on the underneath side, they were approximately, just a guess, at like 30 feet in diameter. And they just came on really slow. They reminded me of like a really dim dome light. But they didn't illuminate anything at all. It didn't light up the trees, didn't light up the ground. I could see the lights, but they obviously weren't for illuminating an area.
Chris, did they have color?
No, they were just a dim yellowish-white dome light is the closest thing I can come to describing what they looked like. And this is all happening in parts of a second here. And those came on first, and then right in the center of it on the bottom, which I described as like a Skippy peanut butter lid upside down, it seemed like it was almost three times as big as the outer corner lights. And that kind of came on real slowly, and it was like a really deep ruby red color. It wasn't bright. It didn't illuminate anything.
You're saying if the other lights were 30 feet in diameter, mm-hmm. that the central red light was about 100 feet in diameter.
Yeah, 90 feet, somewhere in there.
That's huge.
Yes.
Was that entire circle, the whole central part, did it come on as deep ruby red?
Yes, it did. All the same. None of it was brighter than any other part of it. I saw that come on, and at the same time, there was a extremely deep subsonic, like it was if you go down in a big dam on a river where the big turbines are turned by the water. An immense feeling and sound of a really low volume, low bass sound. I heard that. That's the only sound that we heard. It had been dead silent up to that point. That happened for like a fraction of a second, and then this thing started to raise straight up above me. And actually, it had to raise straight up because it couldn't move side to side or forward because the way the valley side came up, it would have hit something on one of the corners on there. And at that time, that's when I yelled out on my knees, trying to comprehend it. Holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. You guys have got to come see this. And that's when my brother Mark heard me and Rob. And Mark came out the door, and I was kind of half trying to stand up, half on my knees, half on my feet.
How did you get to your knees?
The lack of comprehension of what it was just basically floored me. I mean, I just gave out.
In complete astonishment.
Yes, yep. Non-comprehension. Astonishment doesn't even come close to describing it. I'd had a few bear encounters and been chased by a bear once. Didn't get me, but I thought I'd been scared that time, but after seeing this, I knew that I didn't ever really know what the word scared meant, but I do now.
Well, you're screaming for your brother and your two hunting buddies. What happens?
Mark came out first, and basically I kind of crawled half on my knees and grabbed hold of his shirt, pulled myself up and pointed up. Didn't say anything, just pointed up. And so Mark looked up. Mark and Rob had the presence of mind. They ran to their pickups, and both of them grabbed their binoculars and were looking at the object in their binoculars. It had started moving forward when I pointed up with Mark, so it wasn't still hovering above us. It was starting to move forward and move up this valley. It seemed like at an extremely slow moving rate, and I described the movement as if you took a hockey puck on ice and just gave a little shove and just smooth and soft just slid along the ice. That's what this reminded me of. Extremely powerful, making no noise. How can something this size do that? What is it? One of my other first impressions was that's not from here. Another impression was how perfect it was. When the light went across the bottom, there was no rivets, no screws, nothing shiny, no insignia, no identification of any sort on the bottom side of that.
How long had your truck been parked where you went out?
Well, it had been parked there when we got back, so we'd probably been there maybe 45 minutes, I guess.
So, Chris, how did this huge football field size get into camp over your truck and be there hovering 100 feet or 200 feet above? It had to have been there when you went out to the truck and then you discovered it because you felt that strange feeling.
That would be my guess. I have no clue how long it was there. Yeah, we have no idea.
It implies stealthiness on the part of the triangle as if it came down low over where you all were, almost as if it was watching.
Sneaking up on us and monitoring what we were doing, I guess, was my impression. But whether it could hear or see us with my yelling and with the flashlight on there, pretty obviously I'd seen it.
What happened to the red light and the three white lights when it began to move?
They just stayed the same. Didn't get any brighter in intensity. Big ruby red light started to throb, I would say like a really, really slow pulsing heartbeat as it started to move forward and up the draw. That light came on to a really deep, low-pitched throb, deep bass that wasn't loud. It was just perceptible. You could just tell it was an immense amount of power. At that point, there was no more noise, just dead silent. You know it's there. You know, it's not some sort of an illusion. This was dead real. It was there. Like the trees and the mountains were there beside us, this thing was over the top of us. Seconds click by slow. We kind of put a timeline together. The whole time from me spotting it to when it was out of sight was somewhere between 45 seconds and 60 seconds.
Do you have any gut sense about what you were so afraid of?
Just not knowing what it was, not comprehending. You know, you can't have something that big. It looked heavy. It looked solid. You can't do that. I've never seen anything like that happen, so how can that be happening?
And be silent for most of the time.
And be completely silent for all but a partial second. You know, we had mules that were tied up. They didn't do anything. Normally, they're like a watchdog. If anything happens, they let you know. No movement from them, you know, no brain or anything else. It's just incomprehensible. Immense power was the only thing that came through. Almost like you could just feel the sound more than hear it.
And your final view of it was what?
We watched it, you know, maybe 15 seconds as it kind of slid like on an escalator or on ice going up out of this valley that went from 6,000 feet to a little over 11,000 feet and approximately 7 miles long. We watched it till it went out of sight over the horizon of the mountain at the top. We went back to the trailer. I walked in first. The other guy, he was looking at me kind of strange. I kind of said, "What?" And he says, "Well, you're completely white." And I had a short sleeve shirt on and looked down and my arms were as white as a sheet of paper.
Like the blood had drained to your organs.
Like the blood had drained clean out of me.
Yeah.
I was pretty shook up. You know, I couldn't even stay there. I tried, but I couldn't do it. We had to drive 3 hours to get to a motel.
What was going through your mind that you were so afraid of?
That I don't know. Kind of like Mark had said, I suppose something just sitting right over the top of you is kind of a threatening posture. When he saw it, it was moving away, so it wasn't in a threatening posture. I mean, it'd be like the difference between if you had a grizzly bear standing over the top of you looking at you to eat you, or if the grizzly bear is running away from you. You got a whole different feel on what's going on. No comprehension of what it was. I mean, that's what scared me.
Chris Bale's younger brother, Mark, works in their Bend, Oregon construction company. Mark Bales also flies his own plane and watched the huge triangular aircraft through 10 power binoculars with the eyes and mind of a pilot.
Yeah, I was in a camp trailer with two other gentlemen, and I heard Chris. I knew it was very urgent, so I just dropped everything I was doing and ran out the door. And he grabbed a hold of me and pointed up in the air, and that's when I saw the whatever it was, the UFO. I was in amazement because the object that I was looking at was actually climbing and moving off, but it was very large. I didn't hear anything. Even when I was in the camp trailer, Chris, I guess, could hear some sort of noise, but I didn't hear anything in the camp trailer. So when I'm outside looking up at this thing and I'm not hearing anything, I'm not smelling anything, I'm just in total, I don't understand what I'm looking at. My pickup was probably 5 yards in front of me, and I just ran up and grabbed my binoculars. There was another gentleman there beside me, and he did the same thing. I had 10 power binoculars, and I picked up my binoculars and watched this thing as it was ascending and moving off.
And what did you see?
Well, it looked like it kind of was shaped like a manta ray. Like looking at a manta ray, you know, swimming off, only doesn't have the tail. So out on the two tips of it, on both sides, you'd have the white lights. You know, it's climbing, so I can see the underside of it from behind, a pulsating red light that was soft and pulsing. In the middle of it, on the underside of it, there were two white lights on both sides of that. You know, if you were looking at a manta ray from behind, it would be out on the tips.
Right, and it sounds like that maybe then the front light was tipped up away so you couldn't see it?
Right, because I wasn't directly underneath it. But I'll tell you what I could see that I don't think Chris saw, because he didn't see it from the same perspective that I saw it. But on top of it, there was a light glow of a dome-type white light-looking thing on top of it.
What was the shape?
If you took a fire alarm and set it upside down on a plate, it'd be like that.
Circular or?
Yeah, kind of a saucer shape.
So this was a round raised portion up on top.
Yeah, but it wasn't very high. It was just slight.
It's round and it is raised up a little bit and white light is coming from it glowing.
Yeah, just a dim glowing light. It wasn't something that was bright. You probably couldn't even have seen it was there without binoculars. We were just standing there in amazement. I didn't even talk to him until we got back into the trailer.
As you are watching through binoculars, what is running through your mind about what this might be?
I was trying to figure out what I was looking at. I mean, it's kind of an odd thing. I mean, it's not often that you get to look at something and just come up with a big blank. I'm a pilot, so I understand, you know, what kind of flight characteristics aircraft have. I mean, when this thing, it didn't really bank like an aircraft. It just sort of slid. Couldn't hear a thing. Couldn't smell anything. So that was very perplexing, how something of this size could maneuver like it was with no audio sounds at all.
It is peculiar that your mule animals didn't react.
No, and usually they're the first clue that something's going on around your campsite, and they acted like there was absolutely nothing going on. That was very interesting.
Yeah. So what was the very last moment that you saw?
I think Chris told you the campsite was approximately 6,000 feet in elevation. The highest peak was right in the 11,000-foot neighborhood. We just saw this thing eventually disappear out of sight going over the top of the peak.
How did you end up contacting other people about this?
Well, Chris and I, we did sit down and drew up what we would seen. We had some GPS coordinates that we jotted down. And then He was so shook up that he was not going to spend the night there in camp. So what we did was we got in the pickup and we drove to a town and spent the night. The other two gentlemen had their animals there. Their mules were like family to them. They weren't leaving them, so they stayed.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent the night in town, and then the next morning, the next question in our mind was, you know, when you see something like this, what do you do about it? And I decided I'd call the tower in Boise, Idaho, because I didn't know who else to contact. And, you know, I kind of half expected the guy there to not take us serious. He was very interested in what we saw and very helpful. I just simply asked him if he'd seen anything strange on radar. And he asked me why, and I explained what we'd seen. And then he put us in touch with the assistant director of the Federal Aviation Administration. He gave us the numbers to Mountain Home Air Force Base. I think that's how we got in touch with Peter Davenport. And then we started calling these agencies, filing reports, and all of them, you know, I didn't know what to expect when I called them. Had the first guy laughed, I probably wouldn't have called the rest, but they were all very interested. Most of them had a conference call going on. They wanted other people to listen in on the conversation.
Hmm. Did anybody in authority, military, intel, police, anyone come to talk with you and your brother?
Well, we didn't know it, but right after we made the call to the military, I guess back in camp, maybe it's a coincidence, probably not, there were two jets scrambled that flew right over the exact coordinates that we'd given the military. So, you know, that was that following morning after we had made these calls.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they were interested.
Which military would that have been, do you think?
You know, it's just pure speculation because I can't say anything for sure, but the closest Air Force Base was Mountain Home Air Force Base in Mountain Home, Idaho.
And after the jets flew over, what else happened?
Well, we just progressed back to camp. I might add that I guess the military called Chris's house three times while we were still over there. We didn't leave. We stayed over for a few more days.
Mm-hmm.
But they were trying to get in contact with us through his home phone number back in Bend, Oregon.
When you got home after this trip, did you ever follow up and talk with the military people who had called?
We didn't really follow up with it. We'd made the calls that we thought we needed to make, and we just kind of left it alone after that.
We're talking on May 19th, 2009, which is almost 9 years later. What is in your mind today about this event and what this could have been?
You know, in my mind today, I still don't understand what I saw. It's still frustrating to really not get any definite answers. It's not something that you talk a lot about to people that haven't experienced the same thing because it seems to be a lopsided conversation. I would like to see it again. You know, it wasn't something that was threatening to me because it was moving off. I would really love to have some of this explained.
There is that haunting question. What was something the length of a football field doing down 100 to 200 feet right above your camp?
That's a great question. And really, you know, you can't really explain the precarious situation that would be in. I look at things from a pilot standpoint. This was very abrupt terrain. We were on the side of a valley, so this took some very high-tech, complex design to be able to maneuver where they were maneuvering.
As a pilot, what is your thought about something that might be defined as extraterrestrial from off-planet?
I think it's entirely possible. Like we told the military when we were talking to them, if you don't have one of those, you really need to get one because it was amazing. It was truly amazing.
And what did they say?
You know what? They were very serious about everything. They didn't laugh much.
And if it is from outer space, it means we're not alone in this universe, and there are other intelligences that are far, far advanced beyond human.
Beyond anything I know, we're not the only ones that have seen this in that area. We were describing it to one of my good friends, and his uncle was there. And Chris was drawing this out in the dirt in the barnyard.
Right.
And he stopped Chris, and he finished the drawing. And it was exactly what Chris was going to draw.
This is a rancher in the Challis area.
Yeah, and these are good friends. We just simply ask them, hey, you guys didn't see anything strange the other night, you know, and they said, like what? And we told them, and they explained that people in the area have seen this stuff. This wasn't on the same night, but they had prior to that night.
Prior to September 27, 2000?
Yeah.
And what did the rancher say about what he saw? And
well, they'd seen pretty much the same exact shape that we'd seen, They viewed it from more of a distance than we'd seen it, but they told me that this thing, well, I don't know if it was this particular craft that we'd seen, but they said they'll see lights in that valley that are in one position in 1 second and then 50 miles away in just a millisecond, faster than you could describe.
The rancher is describing seeing unusual lights that seem to be able to jump distances in the same hunting valley, and that they've seen this multiple times.
Well, yeah. Most all of those people in the area that have lived there for, you know, 50, 60 some years have seen these things.
You can see a colored drawing of what Chris Bales saw close up over his truck. In my Earth Files report, Idaho hunters describe a huge triangle aircraft over their campsite.
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.